This week, the author of The Builders, a prolific Masonic clergyman, poetically describes the philosophy of Masonry. We read wise words from a past Grand Master of Pennsylvania about five core thoughts on Freemasonry. Illustrious Brother Harrison stops in for an all-new Masonic Minute when a Grand Master pulls himself from the brink of death just to open Grand Lodge sessions. The brothers are no doubt astounded, and yet you have got to hear the rest. We'll bring it all home with a lighthearted piece that's sure to make you laugh, but might just rally the troops. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 431. Many thanks goes out to everybody listening to the program week after week. I want to give a special thanks to the Southern California Research Lodge for allowing me to read the great article from Brother Greg Kaminsky on dissonance in Freemasonry last week on the program. They had the entire issue is dedicated to the idea of dissonance in Freemasonry, and many of the articles were just on point, and it's really kind of an interesting topic because it's not something that's so easy. You know, when we say something like, oh, let's talk about the trowel and spreading the brotherly love and affection. This is an interesting topic. It's dissonance. So through dissonance, we find harmony and vice versa. And it's an interesting topic to just really grind into. If you want to learn more, go to TheResearchLodge.com for more information. This week on the show, as you heard at the top, we've got some great papers, and we'll get into those right after we pay the bills. All right, so it's time to pay the bills. How do we make this show happen? This show happens because you, the listeners, help us out. So how do you help us out, though? Well, since July of 2011, this podcast has been here waiting for you every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Consistency is the name of the game. We are creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. This is not a small endeavor. It requires hours of work each week on top of what we all have, right? We have work, kids, spouses, and we've got a few ways to help support this show. Really, our two main ways are through donations. You can become a contributor, a fellow, or a producer, and you can do that through Patreon. We have a $2 a month contributor level. You get your name on our website as a contributor. If you're a fellow, that's a $5 a month donation, and that puts your name on the website. I send you a card in the mail. I handwrite these cards when you do those donations. I don't have these things filled out. They're not pre-printed. None of that. This is me really trying to say thanks. Meaningful thanks. And, of course, the producer level. Our producer level is $10 a month. You get the name on the website, a thank you card in the mail. And also with that, I'll send you the producer's pin also. Now, that's on Patreon. We have a lot of people who like to support us through PayPal. We offer those same exact perks. The contributor, the fellow, the producer, with all the same stuff through PayPal, a subscription model. So you can do either one of those things, or you can make a one-time gift through PayPal and just say, hey, I'm going to send you $2, or hey, I'm going to send you $3 one time, whatever the case is. I appreciate all of it. It offsets the cost of this podcast. Something to keep in mind is that we also sell the producer's pin by itself. It's $10. I have a Mason's Lady decal, and of course the It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry book that I co-wrote with John Ruark that has rave reviews all over Amazon.com, and you can get it on Amazon, not autographed, and you can get it on Audible also. All of the money that comes in through this stuff offsets the cost of putting this program together. And I want you to remember that you're the producer of the program. And in the last 10 years, Masonic education has come a long way. Is it a coincidence? Maybe. But we have to keep this ship on course. We're always pushing for better lodge experiences, Masonic education, and this show offers a way to assist people in coming up with new ideas and things to bring to lodge and to educate new brothers and people interested in the craft. So I would just say, if you're already a producer, a fellow, or a contributor, or you've donated cash at some point, or bought a pin, or whatever you've done for us, thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, I'd like to get into this week's first piece, and it's by a Masonic titan. You heard in the top of the show, Brother Joseph Fort Newton. He's the author of an incredible volume of works, but most notably his work is on The Builders, which is one of the most frequent cited authors when it comes to must-reads in Freemasonry, specifically The Builders. I remember I got my first copy of The Builders several years ago when I was visiting a valley that was selling his books. So this first piece is called Masonic Philosophy by Joseph Fort Newton. Now, just some backstory on Fort Newton. He was a doctor, a clergyman, a Masonic author, lived from 1880 until 1950. Brother Newton was raised in Friendship Lodge No. 7 in Dixon, Illinois, later affiliating with Mount Hermon Lodge No. 263 of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He is the author of one of Freemasonry's classics, The Builders, from which this particular article was taken. A list of Joseph Fort Newton's books still is in print and is available for purchase in many retailers. Specifically, it's all over Amazon.com, so you can really go there and get most of it. McCoy's or Lewis Masonic may have some of his stuff as well. Because the human soul is akin to God and is endowed with powers to which no one may set a limit, it is, and of right ought, to be free. Thus, by the logic of its philosophy, not less than the inspiration of its faith, Masonry has been impelled to make its historic demand for liberty of conscience, for the freedom of the intellect, and for the right of all men to stand erect, unfettered and afraid, equal before God and the law, each respecting the rights of his fellows. What we have to remember is that before this truth was advocated by any order or embodied in any political constitution, it was embedded in the will of God and the constitution of the human soul. Nor will Masonry ever swerve one jot or title from its ancient and eloquent demand till all men everywhere are free in body, mind, and soul. Someday, when the cloud of prejudice has been dispelled by the searchlight of truth, the world will honor Masonry for its service to freedom of thought and the liberty of faith. No part of its history has been more noble, no principle of its teaching has been more precious than its age-long demand for the right and duty of every soul to seek that light by which no man was ever injured, and that truth which makes man free. Down through the centuries, often in times when the highest crime was not murder but thinking, and the human conscience was captive, dragged at the wheel of the ecclesiastical chariot, always and everywhere, Masonry has stood for the right of the soul to know the truth and to look up unhindered from the lap of earth into the face of God. Not freedom from faith, but freedom of faith has been its watchword. On the ground that as despotism is the mother of anarchy, so bigoted dogmatism is the prolific source of skepticism. Not only does Masonry plead for that liberty of faith which permits a man to hold what seems to him true, but also, and with equal emphasis, for the liberty which faith gives to the soul, emancipating it from the despotism of doubt and the fetters of fear. Therefore, by every art of spiritual culture, it seeks to keep alive in the hearts of men a great and simple trust in the goodness of God, in the worth of life, and the divinity of the soul, a trust so apt to be crushed by the tramp of heavy years, help a man to a firm faith in an infinite pity at the heart of this dark world, and from how many fears is he free. Once a temple of terror haunted by shadows, his heart becomes a cathedral of serenity and gladness, and his life is enlarged and unfolded into richness of character and service. Nor is there any tyranny like the tyranny of time. Give a man a day to live, and he is like a bird in a cage beating against its bars. Give him a year in which to move to and fro with his thoughts and plans, his purposes and hopes, and you have liberated him from the despotism of the day. Enlarge the scope of his life to 50 years, and he has a moral dignity of attitude and a sweep of power impossible hitherto, but give him a sense of eternity. Let him know that he plans and works in an ageless time, that above his blunders and sins there hovers and waits the infinite. Then he is free. Nevertheless, if life on earth be worthless, so is immortality. The real question, after all, is not as to the quantity of life, but its quality, its depth, its purity, its fortitude, its fineness of spirit and gesture of soul. Hence the insistent emphasis of Masonry upon the building of character, and the practice of righteousness upon that moral culture without which man is rudimentary, and that spiritual vision without which intellect is the slave of greed or passion. What makes a man great and free of soul, here or anywhither, is loyalty to the laws of right, of truth, of purity, of love, and the lofty will of God. How to live is the one matter, and the oldest man in his ripe age has yet to seek a wiser way than to build, year by year, upon a foundation of faith in God, using the square of justice, the plumb line of rectitude, the compass to restrain the passions, and the rule by which to divide our time into labor, rest, and service to our fellows. Let us begin now and seek wisdom and the beauty of virtue and live in the light of it, rejoicing. So in this world shall we have a foregleam of the world to come, bringing down to the gate in the mist something that ought not to die, assured that, though hearts are dust, as God lives, what is excellent is enduring. All right, I hope you enjoyed that piece. You know, one of the things about Fort Newton is that he talks in such a poetic manner. And, you know, this is not so surprising considering he was a clergyman, but his emphasis on the contemplation of God and the very large emphasis, again, on the idea of immortality, this is an interesting concept. This is, you know, some say the ultimate secret of the ancient mysteries, and it's something that we allude to also within Freemasonry and just about every other mystery school, provided we don't get lost along the way in terms of, you know, the history or explanations of ritual and symbols. There is a deeper meaning, and this idea of immortality is key, that you would teach a man that he is infinite and thence no more fear of death, right? You just do what you do in order to be successful and to help things out and further everything along without the fear of something like death to slow you down. It is interesting because I myself do a lecture on the idea of apotheosis and quantum entanglement. And really what we do is we just prove that without any kind of dogma at all, you are infinite. You do live forever. There is no such thing as death. It is an illusion. So, the next thing I'd like to do is get into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. Let's see what he's got to say.
Born on St. John the Evangelist Day, December 27, 1884, Samuel R. Freet seemed to be destined for Freemasonry from the very start. A teacher and lawyer, he was raised in Ivanhoe Lodge number 446 in Kansas City in 1910 and served as its master 10 years later. That same year, 1920, he was appointed to the advancing line of the Grand Lodge of Missouri. His lengthy progression through the offices in the Grand Line culminated in 1929 when he became Grand Master. Each Grand Master looks forward to presiding over a successful Grand Communication at the end of his term, and most worshipful Brother Freet was no exception. After years of work moving through the Grand Line offices and a year of preparation for his Grand Lodge Communication, most worshipful Brother Freet was stricken with kidney disease near the end of his term. His affliction required surgery that left a 10-inch scar in his back and severely limited his mobility. His condition weakened him, and brothers reported him being confined to a bed when they visited him prior to Grand Lodge. At that time, his wife Gertrude informed the brothers that her husband's doctors said he only had months to live. Freet, in fact, struggled with his health issues for two more years, passing away October 4, 1931, at the young age of 46. The Deputy Grand Master, William Gentry, made plans to fill in at the meeting should most worshipful Brother Freet be unable to attend. Preet, however, had other plans. He mustered his strength and came to the meeting looking frail and thin. Preet opened the Grand Lodge meeting and presided over it until it was time for his Grand Master's address. He read two paragraphs and then nearly collapsed. Although unable to continue, his brothers ordered a bed from the hotel staff and placed it just off stage so he could be present for the proceedings. Deputy Grand Master Gentry then proceeded to read the Grand Master's message. Somewhat recovered, Preet was reported to be in good spirits. Hearing that, past Grand Master Ray Denslow decided a little humor might be in order. He went over to Brother Freet's bed and reported, "Most Worshipful, I have gone over the proceedings of the Grand Lodge carefully and discovered you are the only Grand Master in our history ever to have been compelled to suffer the punishment of listening to his own address." For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, as usual, another amazing segment by illustrious Brother Harrison. If you like to find out more about illustrious Brother Harrison, please go ahead and head on over to MasonicInstruction.com and look for his profile there. You'll find it, and you can schedule him to come out and do talks or just get in contact with him. He's a phenomenal speaker, and his books are great too. You can find his books if you go to wcypodcast.com, click on the bookstore, and you'll find links to his books there as well. And we'll hear more from illustrious Brother Harrison after this next paper when I read one of the papers he just wrote for the Midnight Freemasons that really had me in stitches. But first, we're going to read a paper called Five Masonic Thoughts, and it's by Brother William A. Carpenter, Right Worshipful Grand Master. Now, one of the only places around where you can be a Grand Master and you're Right Worshipful and not Most Worshipful is Pennsylvania, and that proved to be correct once I started reading the paper, so here we go. From a Masonic Culture Handbook, issued by the Right Worshipful Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania, we have extracted several items which came from the inspired pen of Brother William A. Carpenter, the current Right Worshipful Grand Master, written many years ago. They stand the test of time. Our basic function. The basic function of a Masonic Lodge is to make Master Masons. This does not mean the formality of raising candidates. It extends far beyond that period in the life of a Mason. The task of making Master Masons must be directed toward all of us, those who are Master Masons and those who are in the process of becoming Master Masons. The fruits of our efforts to teach and to learn about Freemasonry, the interest that we show the candidates as we welcome them into the new world of Freemasonry will be evident in the years to come. If we sow well, we are bound to reap well. Being well and duly prepared. Being well and duly prepared is a Masonic expression. Masons understand its significance in the lodge room. However, they may also interpret it outside the lodge. No Mason enters even the ground floor of the lodge unless he is well and duly prepared. So simple is his dress that it provokes no envy. He is dressed properly for the occasion, and everyone so dressed feels perfectly at ease among his brethren. No place here for the rich to boast of the fine raiment and resplendent jewels, nor for the poor to envy his more fortunate brothers, or covet their wealth. Their clothing in each case symbolizes labor and innocence. With hand and brain, each is ready to serve his fellow man. With forbearance and toleration, each is willing to forgive the crude and ignorant everywhere. To carry the symbolism of Masonic investiture, still further, every Mason should be clothed in the habiliments of truth. His wardrobe should contain the robe of justice with which to protect those who, for any reason, have been deprived of their just rights, the mantle of charity with which to comfort those made destitute, many times by no cause of their own, a tunic of toleration with which to hide the weakness of the wayward and help them to the road of recovery, the cloak of mercy, which to cover the wounded and suffering in mind or body with unstinted sympathy and kindness. These garments are all of genius quality, measured and cut by the master tailor. They are serviceable and in good taste on every occasion. They too may be had without money and without price, and the man who wears them is truly properly clothed, and well and duly prepared as a master mason. Freemasonry is many things. Freemasonry is a story of life with all its joys, its heartaches, its failures, and its final triumph over all earthly things. Anyone can read it in countless books. Its teachings, its symbols, and its ambitions are open for general observation. They are practiced in the light and held up for all the world to see. Freemasonry is not practiced in the dark. Neither are its teachings the dogma of some forbidden cult. We as Freemasons are required to reflect the light, to practice its teachings and love by their direction. No greater thing can be said of Freemasonry than that it is an ideal way of life. No other fraternity offers such profound lessons in its ritual of work as does Freemasonry. Each word and each act in the ceremonies of the Lodge carries a true lesson to each of us if we will but open our eyes to see, our ears to hear, and our hearts to accept. We can study Freemasonry for years as we attend its meetings, and each time we stop to think on the things said and done, we get a new meaning and inspiration from them. There is a never-ending source of pleasure in the various shades of meaning that can be read into each line of our work. Each new meaning and interpretation that we put into some word or act will make that passage live for us, and we will begin to see Freemasonry for what it is intended. Great men have devoted many years of study and meditation to the cause of Freemasonry, and when their work is finished, they realize that they have only begun to see the light, and that they have only started to uncover the true meaning of the work. Freemasonry has been talked of and written about by countless men in every country of all the world. Its members have been persecuted in all lands at one time or the other, but it still grows and flourishes as no other fraternity on earth today. There must be something good and great in Freemasonry for it to stand through the years as a beacon of light to its members and as a symbol of the true way of life for all to see and follow. Its greatness is not due to its secret teachings, its mysteries, or fanfare of its deeds, but rather to the profound lessons taught to its members and to the comfort, inspiration, and enlightenment brought to all who will but study. Freemasonry frowns on advertising its good deeds, preferring to let those who benefit from them reflect its goodness, that others might have hope and desire the better things of life. Freemasonry offers comfort to those who sorrow, hope for those who despair, wise counsel for those who err, and the joys of contentment of life to all. Seek, and ye shall find. The making of a Freemason consists in a continued course of education and of character forming. While it may be accepted that it is an innermost desire followed by obligations that make one a member of the craft, yet in a truer form and better sense, a man is never a Freemason until he truthfully and loyally lives up to his obligations, and he cannot do that until he understands them and eventually knows their scope and real meaning. Freemasonry can very well be divided into many phases: its landmarks, its customs, its constitution, and its laws, just to mention a few, if studied and mastered, can provide a most interesting course for the master mason seeking Masonic knowledge. Its historical background can provide an interesting program of investigation to the member attracted to a desire for research. One peculiarity about Freemasonry is that it will stand investigation. The deeper research, the more extensive the knowledge of its hidden art and mysteries, the more highly it is appreciated. a member of the craft who merely takes his degrees in a listless, careless sort of manner and then remains as a just spectator at lodge meetings may hold to the opinion that Freemasonry differs little from other societies. To the contrary, the master Mason who delves deeply into Masonic literature takes a lively interest in every part of the ritualistic and lodge work, and learns the origin, meaning, and moral bearing of its symbols, cannot possibly fall into such an error. To him, Freemasonry has a refining and elevating influence not to be found in the ordinary run of organizations. The philosophies of Freemasonry, when discovered and then accepted and practiced, provide that simple but profound solution to the problems of human relationships. May it be accepted that Freemasonry is a way of living. To the Master Mason who is interested enough to appraise and value the wealth that is his, and his alone by virtue of his Masonic membership. The best informed Master Mason is the Master Mason who reads and studies. Consequently, if we want Freemasonry to be of practical usefulness and cultural attainment, we, as Freemasons, must not neglect our Masonic reading, our Masonic studying, and our research for more Masonic light. Needed a knowledge of Freemasonry. At no time in Masonic history has there been a greater need for understanding of what Freemasonry is and what it stands for than there is today. Much has been left undone in the education of members of our lodges. The first essential in Masonic education is the desire to become interested and enthused in Freemasonry, followed by a thirst for knowledge as to what Freemasonry is all about. Here is where the instructors can serve well and can influence the candidate in a continuous search for more Masonic light. The qualifications for instructing are less exciting than may be imagined. What is essential is a basic knowledge of Freemasonry by the instructor. In this day and age, with so many counter-attractions, it becomes more evident that greater efforts must be put forth to instruct our new members in the ideals and fundamentals of Freemasonry. Every lodge should have a definite program along authentic Masonic educational lines. We must understand that what Freemasonry really is before we can practice Freemasonry in our lives. We must remember that Freemasonry is judged by the actions of its individual members. We must set an example to those outside the craft at all times. The need for Masonic knowledge is often evidenced in our lodges. This can be alleviated where dedicated members qualify as instructors and then serve in teaching the principles and fundamentals of Freemasonry to all who will listen. And there we have this additional poetic paper that really speaks to the core five fundamentals as this Grand Master saw fit to outline. Now, before I dive into the last piece this week, I did want to talk to you all about something that happened over this last week. You know, I put up a poll in several different Facebook groups, and I said, which lodge experience best captures what you see? And answers were things like, we have 100 members and 50 show up, or 100 members and 20 show up, and maybe we have 500 members and 30 show up. I wanted to know what the average number of attendance was based on your membership. And of course, these are subjective in nature, but I wanted to get a feeling for it, so that's not hard data at all. But I wanted to know what was the percentage that was really out there that's active. I pulled the Texas Freemasonry page, and they had about 13-point-something percent that was active and coming to meetings. Illinois was about 10.3, and then I pulled the Winding Stairs, and it was a much larger demographic there. So some healthy lodges, apparently, the average was about 20 members per meeting, which is phenomenal. But then when I averaged everything out together, really we had a much clearer picture of about 15.15%. So we'll round to just 15%. So I put together a button pin, not unlike a campaign pin, that hopefully will drive some people to wear this pin and to say, hey, I'm proud to be a 15%er, the person who comes to lodge at all the meetings. So the little lapel pin, you can find it on our wcy.com/the-shop, and it's not for sale. how do you get this little button pin? Well, you got to come to Lodge. So if I see you at Lodge, or you see me at Lodge, I'm making a promise until they're all gone. If you ask for one, I will give you one. That's it. If I see you at Lodge, if you ask for one, I will give you one. Here's the caveat. You cannot be a master who gavels me up and then requests that I give one to everybody in the joint. It must be after or before the meeting or at dinner, and I should have those on me. And if for whatever reason I don't, I will send one to you with no charge on shipping. My fault. But I should have them, and I only did 50 of them, so we'll see how it goes. But if you see me, ask for one, and I'll make sure that I have those on me, but you gotta ask. All right, now we're coming to closing out this particular episode, and I just have to say, this is the piece that had me in stitches. I'm going to read this for you, and I'm going to really hope that I don't start laughing. So this one's called The Masonic Jig by Midnight Freemason contributor, illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison, Fellow of the Missouri Lodge of Research. I stand in the back of the lodge room acting as marshal in this entered apprentice initiation. The worshipful master turns and walks back into the arch formed by the steward's staffs. He stops and stands still. I wait for my signal. After about 2 seconds, the signal doesn't come, and about five guys start doing the Masonic jig. The Masonic jig goes something like this. The performer raises his hands in the air and then brings them down almost violently while flexing his knees downward. At the same time, he whispers / shouts, "Lights down! Lights down!" The dancer performs the motion over and over until the room becomes dark. The astute reader will actually recognize this as a form of K-pop. Who says Freemasons aren't hip? The master, as it turns out, was waiting for his signal to turn, which he thought was the room going dark. I was waiting for my signal to darken the room, which I knew to be the master turning. A 2-second deadlock developed, which was other brother's signal to flail like monkeys on a hot griddle, at least momentarily, damaging the dignity of the occasion. I promise, in a couple more seconds I'd have figured it out and turned down the lights. Failing that, instead of the Simeon Boogaloo, I would much have preferred a single proctor saying, "Lights down, please." Properly delivered, the candidate might have thought that was part of the ceremony. Aha, the peanut gallery. That ever-present bevy of brothers ready to spring into action with corrections the instant a speaker says "your" instead of "thy," or "blessings and mercies" instead of "mercies and blessings." This affliction is a corollary to the Masonic jig known as Masonic Tourette Syndrome. These disorders are so prevalent in Missouri, we must read a statement before each Master Mason degree, prompting the brothers to cool it. Paraphrasing here, the document reminds brothers, the third degree is solemn and meaningful experience, not an opportunity to audition to become a shrine clown. When I was master, translation, back in my day, Sonny, I sometimes appointed a proctor and requested the other brothers let him prompt for corrections in a more controlled and orderly fashion. This was somewhat effective, although I have to admit I always appointed the most offending and disruptive brother to that position, knowing he wouldn't play second fiddle to anyone else, and would jump in anyway. It was cheating, but the end justifies the means, right? So let's say it's a first degree, and the chaplain offers this prayer, "Vouchsafe thine aid, great architect of the universe, to this our present convention." Oh my God, if that doesn't call for a nuclear Tourette blast, I don't know what does. But here's the thing. Neither the candidate receiving the degree nor any non-Mason reading this has a clue as to why. Let it ride, people. The words may have been changed, but the meaning wasn't. The candidate will walk away thinking, that was a beautiful prayer, instead of, I wonder if God was able to hear the prayer over all that shouting from the sidelines. You know, a letter-perfect ritual is great, but if I go to a meeting in Kansas, just 20 miles west of my house, I don't even recognize half the ritual. Again, the meaning is far more important than getting the exact words in order, letter perfect. Heck, nobody can do that anyway. I guess each one of us just needs to make sure we're not disruptive and maybe gently remind the peanut gallery to dial it down in the ceremonies. A little decorum does not go a long way. These ceremonies require large doses of it, especially when candidates are involved. I think the next time I master, yeah, that's likely, I'll just hang a banner in the East that says Masonic ceremonies are not study clubs. Stephen L. Harrison, 33rd degree. Steve Harrison, if you guys don't know, is a past master of Liberty Lodge number 31 in Liberty, Missouri. He's also a fellow and past master of the Missouri Lodge of Research. He's got so much stuff behind him. He's just an incredible individual. He'll never admit to it, but he's a mentor to hundreds, if not thousands. That's it for this week. I would just like to remind everybody that on February 21st, I'll be doing Esoterics 101 with a focus on the origins of some of our esoteric schools. So a little twist on the Esoterics 101. I'll be doing that out at Landmark Lodge number 422 in Plainfield, Illinois. We'll start off there probably 7:30-ish. The master has informed me that we have no time limit, and I'll be speaking with Brother Bull Garlington, so maybe I'll see you there. And if I don't see you there, maybe I'll see you the next day at the Libertyville Masonic Lodge number 492 Symposium. That's right, they're going to do a little education symposium. I'll be doing the Ark in Freemasonry, a brand new presentation that I've never done before, but I said, what do you guys want to hear? And they said, how about the Ark? Can we hear about the Ark? And I said, sure, I have enough time. I'll put that together. So I did. So I'll have a little presentation on the Ark in Freemasonry, just exploring the legend of the Ark of the Covenant, some historical facts, its relationship to Freemasonry, and of course, its occult significance. But you got to register. So I would love it if you would go to WCYpodcast.com, click on event details, and just register. It's free. But you'll let them know that you're coming. And then, of course, on the 7th, the Southeastern Masonic Education Symposium, March 7th, that is, it's going to go all day, and it's at Hillsboro Lodge, number 25, FNAM, in Tampa. Again, that one, there are ticket sales, so you will need a ticket. And then I think toward the end of March, I will be in La Crosse, Wisconsin, doing a Masonic pub crawl, Freemasonry in America, and its colonial tavern beginnings. You can find a whole list of all the talks that I do on the website there, wcypodcast.com. All the schedules at the top, the talks are at the bottom, and at the very bottom is a Google Calendar. When you head over to wcypodcast.com, just a nice little reminder, check out that bookstore where you can buy a book, and most of the proceeds go to Amazon, but a few pennies from the book sales get sent back to this show. So we do appreciate you buying books through that link, and if you'd like to find anything else out, check out our friends, Franklin's Fortune, the Great Books Program, Onnit Labs, and of course, our friends over at Amity. Don't forget to check out the Midnight Freemasons, publishing new content every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. The Masonic Roundtable going live every Thursday at 8:30, 9:30 Eastern. And subscribe to us on YouTube. That way we can get enough subscriptions and likes that they enable a couple features for us that will allow us to record and do some fun stuff at YouTube studios all over the United States. So there's that. Well, that's it, guys. I want to say thank you so much. Drop me a line and let me know if you like the new show format, music throughout all of the papers, the new intro. So far, all the feedback has been good. Maybe you don't like it. Do you need me to dial it back? Do you like it without music during the readings? Does it add to the readings? Is it better? Is it more dramatic? Do you learn more? Do you retain more? How's all of that going? Again, you all produce this program. We can't do it without you. So this is just a shout out to all of our supporters who are producers, fellows, and contributors. And also anybody who has given one-time gifts. We recently got a great gift from Brother Gore. I want to throw a big shout out to you and say thank you so much for that. But that's it for this week. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.